Welcome to the Bourbon Vault. I'm Ben.
I'm Zach.
And today, we're taste testing Elijah Craig Small Batch Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Can I swish it around? There's a little less bite. It's a little smoother.
Did you just do the in the mic?
Yeah, this is like a pet peeve of a lot of people when I eat on the podcast. I get a lot of complaints about it.
Well, we made a specific episode for those who like ASMR.
Yeah, we did. So go look back and listen to Alec and his ASMR. It's great. But what'd you think of that whiskey?
It was great.
Not whiskey, bourbon. Bourbon whiskey.
It was great.
It was good. I think it's a little bit, it's not maybe the strongest I've had. It felt like it just went down a little easier. So, And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, I think it's, I'd describe it as comfortable. It's comfortable whiskey or bourbon whiskey.
So very much not like the movie that we will be reviewing today.
Yeah. Very uncomfortable. And yes, we are actually still the Movie Vault. We didn't completely rebrand. And today we're very excited to continue our sci-fi series by reviewing one of the most famous sci-fi movies of the last 25 years. And it is indeed 25 years old. That is The Matrix. Directed by the Wachowskis, starring Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, and Carrie-Anne Moss. This is a movie that has cemented its legacy as a pop cultural symbol. You'll hear it used in people's daily vocabulary, and it introduced a lot of philosophical ideas into mainstream thought that maybe otherwise wouldn't have been discussed as much as they are, as well as having a lot of really cool martial arts.
Yeah, you looked at me. I agree.
It does have a lot of really cool martial arts.
Oh, yeah. That's like the best part of the film is that scene.
And making wearing leather really cool too. There's undertones of something that might be a little weirder than that, but we'll just go with wearing leather.
I'd be curious to know what that is.
I don't know. I mean, that's just what people have said. I plead the fifth.
Okay. Well, The Matrix came out in 1999, which was one of the greatest years in cinema history.
Or so everyone says.
Oh, do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. I haven't watched every movie from 1999, so I hesitate to call anything the greatest, but on the Ringer movie network or podcast network, they really love the year 1999. They even have their own rewatchables dedicated to 1999 that you have to pay extra for, of course.
Oh, is it a Patreon exclusive?
Yeah, it's like exclusive. You can like buy it through Spotify. I'm like, it's not
behind
worth it,
the but paywall.
It is cool that they have like a whole year whole podcast dedicated to 1999.
Yeah, 1999 was obviously the building up for Y2K, and everything was about to change. We're about to enter the new millennium. We have a bunch of big movies coming out, franchise, non-franchise alike. The starts of franchises, the rise of new actors, the continuance of old great actors. It's really a mosh of the greatest of every corner of this cinema universe, the Cineverse. That would be a cool podcast name. It's probably a podcast name already.
I'm sure it is.
Is in 1999. And really, everyone gave it their best, because why would you not want to make a movie in the year of 1999? That's a really cool year to have been alive. Neither of us were alive for that.
No, my older brother was born in December of 1999, so he got to experience it in his first month. But other than that, I have no real connection to the year 1999.
Were your parents worried? So he's born in December?
Yes.
So were your parents worried that if he were born, was he born in a hospital?
Yeah.
So if you were born on the 31st, do you think your parents were worried that the computers would all shut down?
I don't know. But at that point in time, was computer charting systems really a thing? Like, was it as important that computers be working?
There has to be something electronic.
Yeah, I mean, they could be worried that, like, the whole hospital was going to shut down, like, the power. That might be concerning. The power grid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they might have been concerned about that. Honestly, I don't. My parents have never struck me as real like Y2K believers, but maybe
they didn't get a bug out bag.
Maybe they like don't want to talk about that. Like, they're embarrassed about it.
Oh,
I'll have to ask him.
Yeah, well, obviously, along with the movies.
Oh. I bet Scott and Amy were terrified of Y2K.
I don't know. They weren't even married yet.
Oh, really? I always forget how much younger your parents
are. They got married in 2001, I believe. Or maybe it was 2000, and then I was born in 2002. Gotcha. Over a year later. Everybody always asks. So, over a year later. The Matrix came out this year, along with other notable films such as Fight Club.
Elmo and Grouchland.
Wait, really?
Yeah. I'm looking at my list of movies I've watched from 1999. One star. One star on for Elmo and Grouchland.
Magnolia.
I watched it when I was like 10. Magnolia. Toy Story 2. That's a great movie. Office Space.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Election.
What's the South Park one you watched?
South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut or something like that.
Continuance of a Franchise, Episode 1 of Star Wars, Phantom Menace.
The Sixth Sense, that was a huge one.
That was probably one of the biggest ones from that year. So you have a culmination of all of these great films that came out, and yet The Matrix also stands out among them.
Would you say that The Matrix is the pinnacle of movies from 1999? I don't mean is it the best. I mean it has the most weight of any movie that came out from 1999.
That's tough because if you think about Fight Club, it kind of has the same message as this film.
Yeah.
And they can both stand together without, I don't know, I can think of one without thinking of the other.
The interesting thing about Fight Club and The Matrix is that I believe that Fight Club bombed in the box office, whereas The Matrix did really well. But like nowadays, Fight Club has this like really huge cult following. And The Matrix, would you say The Matrix has a cult following or is it just a popular movie?
Well, it was a box office success, so I wonder if cult following has to mean that at first it wasn't as well liked and then it has gained.
And it's definitely gained popularity. And like, oh no, I will say that in the sphere that Fight Club has become popular, The Matrix has also become popular, but not in the sense for the movie, but for the scene with the pills. Because Red Pill has become a huge buzzword in certain alpha male spheres. Probably for, I was going to say for better or for worse, but it's almost 100% positively for worse. But it's interesting how you'll see aspects of both Fight Club and The Matrix be like maybe taken out of context a little bit and used in some of these niche internet cultures that were like probably, I mean, the idea of a niche internet culture was barely becoming a thing in 1999, although I'm sure it was still there.
Just think about this for a second. Many of these films from this year are common vernacular today.
Yes.
If you think about, you know, which the red pill or the blue pill, or if you think about, oh, it feels like I'm in the Matrix right now. People say that. People will use those certain things. People will say, I see dead people. People will say, don't talk about Fight Club. You know, there are different things that have kind of carried along over the years. I'm trying to think of one from Toy Story 2, and I'm coming up with a blank.
Well, it was the worst Toy Story, so it's not as memorable.
Do you think?
But that's the one with the
Toy Story
guy.
4 was better than Toy Story 2.
Actually, you're right. It's the third best.
I still love Toy Story 4.
I do like Toy Story 4, but I do think Toy Story 2 is better than Toy Story 4. But Toy Story 3 is the best.
Toy Story 3. So it, for me, it goes 1, 3, 2, 4.
I'd go 3, 1, 2, 4.
Wow. Yeah. And then when 5 comes out, it'll probably be at the bottom.
Probably, because they said they weren't going to do it, and then they will. How about Boondock Saints, though? I mean,
that came out this year.
A memorable movie, too. With, I mean, to me, the scene of Willem Dafoe reenacting the murder scene, dancing like a ballet dancer, and like just going all out in this performance of this like kind of dumb action movie about about brothers who are like part of the Catholic Church who are also like enacting vengeance. It's weird. It's this very strange movie, but Willem Dafoe goes all out and it just makes the movie so worth it, even if it is stupid. But yeah, there's a lot of incredibly memorable movies from this year, and I need to watch more movies from 1999 because this is only from the list of movies that I've seen, which is only 14, and there's like so many amazing movies that came out in 1999.
But I would probably say that, as you said, The Matrix does stand as the pinnacle of the 1999 year for films.
Here's some other big ones: Blair Witch Project, Talented Mr. Ripley, Ratcatcher, which Zach has talked about a little bit on the podcast, Notting Hill, American Pie, The Green Mile, The Straight Story came out this year.
Yeah, Lynch.
October Sky.
Stuart Little.
Stuart Little.
Shining?
I've heard of this movie, Beau Travail.
That's Bringing Out the Dead. I just saw that from far away.
The Mummy. Yeah,
so yeah, The Mummy was one of the top five box offices for that year.
Yeah, Iron Giant, American Beauty. So yeah, so it's, I think there's like a degree of like some of the movies, how they aged and stuff. Like some people think that certain movies didn't age as well as others, but I think the fact that it's just there's a bunch of notable movies, and usually they're spread out across a decade, and a lot of these are like concentrated in 1 year. Plus with like Stanley Kubrick's last movie coming out this year, mm-hmm. with Eyes Wide Shut, it's like there's no doubt that 1999 was a
and that had hype year. Behind it because he had died right before it was released.
And there's all this like Nicole Kidman, Tom Cruise drama with the movie, and it was
drama.
Yeah, because they were married.
Well, I know the drama, but people were also trying to see some things in that film, I heard.
Yeah, I think it was a little tamer than some people hoped.
Yeah.
Even though I will say it's still not very tame. Depends on your definition of tame, I suppose.
Yeah. But The Matrix stands out. And why? Style. I think it's style.
It is.
It's just extreme, amazing style. It was new to cinema. Like you said, the leather jackets, the sunglasses during the day or at night, robots, reality not being real. It really fit the culture well.
Yeah.
This was a time in the 90s where people were trying to be anarchists. They were trying to, you know, push away from the 9-to-5 job and a cubicle in the office working for a boss, you know, and stick it to the man and no longer be a cog in the whatever, the machine. And The Matrix really is a movie for those people, for those young people who wanted to stick it out. And the cool thing about The Matrix was just kind of the behind the scenes of it. If I'm thinking about The Matrix, one part that I remember, I was listening to the Cinephiles episode on it. I was listening to The Big Picture and a few other things in preparation for this. Keanu Reeves is the face of The Matrix. He plays Neo, also known as Thomas A. Anderson, who is a hacker, and Neo is his pen name, I guess. And he feels something wrong and eventually comes to know who The Matrix is through Trinity and Morpheus, or what The Matrix is. And Neo, the actor for Neo, Keanu Reeves, was just coming out of having a career as a character in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures series.
You're right, he was.
And it was funny, just kind of reading up on how the casting choices were made, that originally Leonardo DiCaprio was going to play Neo, and he ended up leaving the project. Then it was between Reeves and Johnny Depp. And the Wachowskis wanted Johnny Depp, and apparently the studio wanted Keanu Reeves, which was so interesting coming out of that. And apparently Keanu Reeves had been in a few other movies that had kind of been failures. And I've heard from people – I haven't seen the films. I've heard from people who have watched the films that his acting in it was pretty horrible. And, the studio went for a bunch of other people. Brad Pitt, Val Kilmer, Nicolas Cage, Will Smith, who went on to make Wild Wild West instead. There were so many moving pieces to kind of even Sandra Bullock was suggested to be Neo. They were going to make a female Neo. And the Wachowskis did push for a lot of female character things, which is great in some of the films, with Trinity being a very strong, nice addition to the cast. So Keanu Reeves actually kills it in this film. And it was a surprise to most people watching the film, but it was not a surprise to the studio or to the Wachowskis, who actually was pretty happy with They were pretty happy with Keanu getting the role. And then Lawrence Fishburne, obviously a very, very good choice. Carrie Ann Moss as Trinity. Hugo Weaving as Agent Smith. And then Joe Pantoliano. Joey Pants, as people say. What do the rewatchables call him? That guy?
They have an award called the Joey Pants That Guy Award, because it's like he's a guy who will just show up in movies. You'll be like, I know who that guy is. And he's actually in Memento, so we probably already talked about this, him being at the Joey Pants Award. And, I mean, his performance in Memento is really good. And he doesn't have as big of a role in this movie, although it's still decently big. And I think he fits it really well. I mean, that's kind of the classic that guy, is that you can play your role really well even if you're not the star.
Yeah, and this obviously, him getting casted in this is also comes on the heels of him getting cast in a Memento, which came out a year after this. So Joey Pants was kind of that guy for, he was kind of building up his career in that. And what I said is this film does well is style.
Oh, so well.
Oh, I thought you were about to disagree with me. You like pushed yourself back.
That is a very distinct look and feel and knows what it's going for. It's very dark, very dingy. It does remind me a lot of Fight Club, which I don't know that you've actually seen Fight Club, but Fight Club also has this really like dingy, rainy, like not as much futuristic. Like The Matrix has a futuristic feel, but it also has like, it's futuristic, but it's like depressing and sad.
Grungy.
Although they're supposed to be like in the future out of The Matrix, but they're still in 1999 in The Matrix. So for some reason, The Matrix is programmed conveniently, so it's taking place in 1999, the year the movie comes out. I thought that was, at my second or third time watching this movie, I was like, that maybe is a tiny bit of a plot hole, but it's convenient for being able to film stuff well. It's not really a plot hole. It's more of just a weird quirk.
Like, why would they do that?
Like, why 1999? Yeah. You know, it could be any year. It's supposed to be like 1,000 years in the future or like something like
maybe
that.
Maybe, well, it's 2199, so it's 200 years in the future.
200 years. And I can't do math.
No, you're good. It's all right. You don't need math.
I mean, I think the idea is that society didn't really progress too much technologically past that, to the point that AI was invented and took over the world. They obviously didn't want people to think about that, so they went back to you know, before AI. That's probably it.
I mean, you can headcanon it. You can figure out some things in your head. But yeah, The Matrix was filmed in Australia. I learned that. That's just a random fact.
I did remember that a little bit, but yeah, that's
much of it was filmed there, which explains some of the scenery. This was actually also Carrie Ann Moss's, she plays Trinity, first role.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Also in Memento.
Yeah. So she really kills it in this film, and the Wachowskis give her just a lot of runtime and a lot of character moments. And really, like, we've never had a cool, I guess, female character in films before this. There are, but not in a movie
not
as big
in
as this.
Action sense.
Yeah, not like, an action star. This is like, and she wasn't a femme fatale either. She was more of like a main character and part of the team. So the Wachowskis were kind of pushing for that. And I don't know. I think the casting was great. Lawrence Fishburne kills it in this as well. And I think the Wachowskis specifically eyed him for this role. Because they had seen him in, which is funny, but they said this, but Apocalypse Now, which he's like 14 years old in that movie, and he plays he plays someone in that movie. I can't remember who it is, but yeah. So I think the casting and the style, and would you disagree? Do you think there's other?
No, casting and style is true, and I was just thinking about what the movie would have been like if Keanu Reeves wasn't in it and there were those other people. And I don't know that any of those other actors could give the physical performance that Keanu Reeves gave.
What about Nicolas Cage? What about Brad Pitt could do that?
No, I mean, this is like intense. Like, he actually learned martial arts for this movie.
Yeah, he spent 6 months learning martial arts for this movie.
In terms of physical acting, I think the other guys, you can't really disagree, are probably better actors in terms of like their range and stuff. But
hold on, I want to go into that because I have an opinion on that as well.
Interesting. Well, but Keanu Reeves, his personality fits the character of Neo, and I don't know if they did this on purpose, but they made it work to where he has this kind of blunt, a little bit spacey kind of reaction to things. You can see a little bit of the, I think he's Ted in Bill and Ted, or maybe he's Bill, I can't remember, but he's really, really like spacey and kind of like a stoner in those movies, and he never really loses that throughout his career. And even in like movies like Point Break, where he's like Point Break is a fantastic movie. I love Point Break, and it's another movie that fits Keanu Reeves really well. But I really don't think that any of these other guys could have done this in the way that Keanu did. I don't.
It's hard to imagine a movie that has been so much quoted and rewatched and beloved by fans being changed, like the main character changing.
I mean, you're right. It is.
It's already cemented into culture, and things are already built upon it. And but Keanu's career has taken off after this.
But there's movies that I can imagine that are big movies that I can imagine other actors doing this stuff.
Do you have one on your mind?
Oh, and now I need to think. Now that I said that, I need to think of it. The question is, are they as big of movies as this?
Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, so Yeah, coming off of Bill and Ted, he kills it in this. So the Wachowskis, what do they do right in this film? Well, the thing about questioning reality is... Okay, I'll rephrase that. Questioning reality was kind of a strong point in this film, where Neo is always given choices to question reality, to question his conformity to society, to question whether or not he is going to choose to be ignorant or to pursue truth in spite of it causing suffering to him or others. And he is constantly, throughout the film, giving choice after choice after choice between those two routes, with the most significant choice being red pill or the blue pill, where if you choose the red pill, you get to understand and know what is going on, what's the secret thing. If you choose the blue pill, you will forget everything that you've, you know, kind of learned up to this point, and you can live a happy life, ignorant of the truth. And just a few notable times where he has this decision. There was a scene where he goes, it was a scene where he goes into the car, and he has this thing in his belly button that they put in his belly button, and Trinity's in the car and someone's driving, and they say, okay, we're going to take this thing out of you. And he says no, and he tries to leave the car. She says, okay, listen. And then they open the door and he looks down this street, and she says, you can either go down that street and you know exactly how that ends, or you can come back in here with us. And he chooses to come back there with them because he knew, like, he's going to keep searching for the answer to the question, which is, what is the Matrix? And there are a couple other times where that same question is brought up, and where he can pursue truth or freedom or go back to society. There was the Cinephiles podcast, Ben, brought up a funny analogy where they said it's kind of like the Talking Heads song, Once in a Lifetime, where Neo is kind of like the main character, saying, like, this is not my beautiful house, this is not my beautiful wife, kind of questioning reality.
That is hilarious. I did not remember that. I mean, it's been years since I listened to that podcast episode, but I'm glad they brought up Talking Heads, because that is a really good analogy.
Yeah. And he chose to stay in the car and get the thing out of his belly button. So questioning reality, pursuing truth, that is the largest theme. That is an amazing theme to do in the 90s if you want to make money. I don't know if it's the most moral thing to do as a theme in a movie. But in the 90s, people were questioning these things. These are like the big topics of the day, you know? Are we programmed? Do we have free will? These are the things that people are asking. And within, religion, people are already asking those questions. So these are very potent ideas that cause people to think. And The Matrix is an action movie, yes. But the whole reason that we're doing this series on sci-fi movies is to show that sci-fi movies, action movies, can actually have deep meaning.
Yeah.
And all four of the ones that we're doing in this series, this arc, have somewhat of deep meaning. I don't know about RoboCop. I've never
seen it. Yeah, RoboCop's the one we're going to have to see how much deep meaning we'll be able to pull, but we probably will.
Yeah.
Somehow.
But, I mean, even The Fifth Element, just like the whole messianic storyline and the idea of love being the fifth element and this perfect union between perfect and imperfect. And
well, speaking of messianic storylines.
Yeah, exactly. And did you know that we mentioned the Matrix in the last episode?
Yeah, I do remember. I think, didn't I say that?
You said, man, people have made enough Matrix podcasts. And then the very next episode, we unbeknownst to that line, made the Matrix the next film.
Yeah, I think after that we were like, we should keep doing sci-fi movies. And we're like, okay, we'll do The Matrix. That's very funny. Very, very.
We actually ironic. Had a slot to fill for a week. I think we just put The Matrix in there.
Because
we had to push. Because we had to push one of them back. But, yeah, anyway.
I'm glad we're doing it, though, even though I said that.
Yeah, I mean, whatever.
I guess I'm very hypocritical.
Yeah. So how do you think, I don't know, what do you think about that theme?
I mean, the idea of the pursuit of truth and knowledge to the point that it's not comfortable, I think, is something that everyone has to wrestle with, right? Because what if you could find something that's the truth, but you don't like it? That's what, I mean, and maybe you could change, but not thinking about the fact that you could change. If you could just know the truth, but then you find out that the truth isn't something you like, but and you could still choose to go back to believing in something that isn't the truth, but you do like.
Like Cypher.
What would you actually do? Because Cypher and Neo are contrasted. It's not like the main thing in the movie, but it is like there, where Cypher is like, no, I like comfort. Like, I want to be somewhere that's comfortable. I hate being in actual reality where things are terrible and the world is falling apart. At least in this other place that's not reality, mm-hmm. I can be lulled and live in a dream world and not know.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I guess the thing it made everyone do is say, well, we could be living in the Matrix and we don't know it. And we could, this could be our reality. But like, if you think about it, it's like kind of ridiculous to think that. I mean, there's no evidence of it. I guess if you were presented with evidence of it, that, like Neo was, maybe you would, but.
And bioelectric power is very inefficient.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, probably you could probably dig through a lot of potholes in terms of
atomic nuclear power.
But I don't think that's what the Wachowskis were going for. I don't think they really wanted people going around saying, am I in a matrix? Am I? They wanted people to think about like these philosophical ideas of like truth. And then what I'm saying is what you should then, you know, have to face is, am I really seeking the truth or am I seeking
what I want the truth
that
to
I
be.
Want the truth to be? Yes, that's what I think the Matrix is saying you have to wrestle with.
Yeah, and I mean, this was my first time watching the Matrix. I don't know if I told you that. And I just by the end of the film, I was like, one, being in the Matrix for like the first 5 minutes. If I discovered that we were in a Matrix for the first 5 minutes, it would be so cool. Like, it would be such a great thing to wake up in the embryonic fluid and jump out completely naked into a random lake and have these robots kind of chase you. Then it would be kind of annoying once you get into the Nebuchadnezzar and notice that everybody's stressed out and trying to survive.
You have to eat, like, just pure substance with no taste.
Yeah.
It's just, like, everything that you need.
I mean, it's that or hospital food, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I think... That was the main theme of the film, and that was the strongest point of the film. There are other themes in the film, and I think they all have to do with what you just said, truth or choosing to figure something else, fit something else, man-made truth.
Or ignore truth. I mean, kind of ignore truth, essentially, because I mean, that's the red pill and the blue pill, is like willingly ignoring what the reality is or accepting what the reality is and going and changing your life as a result of it.
Yeah. And we see kind of Morpheus and Trinity as these characters who have already accepted the truth and are pursuing to show others the truth within, you know, within reason, and to, you know, live in that truth and take up the responsibility that comes with that truth, whereas Cypher is trying to lose that responsibility. So I honestly see Neo as kind of a contrast to Cypher, but even more so I see Cypher a contrast to Morpheus, because Morpheus is kind of this religious leader per se.
Yeah.
As he's the idealist, he's the one who's kind of holding everyone together as the glue, the one who's kind of keeping everyone
accountable. He has a very strong center of belief too. Mm-hmm. Like, he believes Neo's the one, and so his belief is what keeps him going. His belief that there will be a one and that he'll have a part in finding and identifying this person, mm-hmm. and that will be the person who saves them. Like, his belief in that keeps him going. Other people's faith in that starts to dwindle, yep. like Cypher, and then they betray mm-hmm. the Nebuchadnezzar and the crew on there.
Yeah.
Or he does specifically.
Yeah. And apparently all of this prophecy that comes from the Oracle, who is in the Matrix, this woman in her kitchen with kids in her living room who can watch Neo bend spoons and
it's very
bald.
Much like the kids in
Stranger Things.
Stranger Things, yes.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like Eleven and like kind of using the force powers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. And then but the Oracle gives this prophecy that the One will come and save everyone from the Matrix. And again, this film is just the first of three films, and they go into more. I think they go into Zion, which is the land, the last like human civilization. And all of these names have meanings. You know, Zion is a biblical meaning. Nebuchadnezzar is a biblical Babylonian name. And, you know, Neo means new. Trinity is biblical. Morpheus means dream or nightmare. So it's like all of their names just show exactly what's going to happen. Cypher means like deception, like disguise. So it's like you can figure out the plot of the movie basically by people's introductions and their names. But yeah, I don't know. I think those were the things that made the film the film.
Here's a question. Do you think that The Matrix gets too much credit for being a philosophical, like a very intriguing philosophical movie?
Does it get credit for that?
I think so. I think a lot of
people... Do people like it for philosophical ideas, or do they like it for the amazing
action sequences? That's actually a really good question. I always thought that The Matrix was this movie that had this aura that it's like people are like, wow, that's like really deep. I didn't think people aren't going into The Matrix watching it as purely action, but there definitely could be people who do.
So was The Matrix the inception of its day?
Maybe. I don't know if that's really what I'm asking. Maybe
where people think it's deep?
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't get too much credit. Maybe that's just like kind of in my head.
I thought people loved it for the action.
I mean, I think people do love
it for the action. Like the questioning reality theme.
Which is the philosophy part.
Yeah. I mean,
is it? I mean, I think as far as action movie standards go, it's almost as deep as you can go, right? Because you want to focus on the action still. You need there to be action. You can't go all Tarkovsky on them and just have it like 20 minutes of a guy like walking through a room.
Yeah.
You know,
completely conceptual movies.
Yeah. And I honestly like would probably rather watch The Matrix 99 out of 100 times
than watch
Stalker, even though Stalker is a great movie. But it's like you can actually, you know, The Matrix packs a punch. And well, I think, you know, stylistically, I'm sure the slow motion and I think people remember like the bullet stopping. They remember all this stuff. But the theme of like reality not being reality definitely like sticks out to people. I think that's what people really think about with
the Matrix. I think you might be right. I was just playing devil's advocate. But
also, I think you might be right too.
Thanks, Ben. But also the fight scenes. I mean, just that very first fight scene where Trinity's like running on the wall and you have these long camera shots where it's like the camera's not changing. It's just following her running across the wall and on the ceiling and just the weird movements. Like they're jumping, they like break the rules of gravity. Like they jump and do triple kicks in the air, and then the martial arts scene comes up, and you see Morpheus and Neo. Literally, like the actors are the ones fighting, and this was before they had technology to make it look real. You know what I mean? So these guys were actually training in real life to fight in this scene. That lasts about like 8 minutes, and
all the slow-mo sequences, if I remember correctly, are like very innovative. Like it's not like people had done like this panning and like slowing down, which helped you see the action better, I think, in a lot of circumstances when they would use the slow motion. It was really cool.
Yeah.
And another thing about this movie is it's I had a thought and it escaped me. No, I was trying to remember it and just go along there. So anyway,
that bourbon got. No, I'm just joking.
No, I had like two sips.
I'm joking. But the another thing, like their dedication to this film, was another thing that made it what it is. Why it stands out among the 1999s. Not only the Wachowskis' casting, not only the style, not only the themes that they implanted, but also the commitment of every single person, because not only training 6 months to learn Kung Fu, but Keanu Reeves like lost 15 to 20 pounds just for his character's role, just for Neo to look skinnier when he comes out of the pod. Like he's bald and he's a lot skinnier and kind of decrepit and pale. Like he was actually pale. He was actually less weight. This wasn't like makeup or anything like that. So it was like those were separate times. Like him doing Kung Fu was a separate time than when he lost 15 to 20 pounds. Like they had to film all that last.
That's crazy.
He also had like spine surgery when he was learning Kung Fu. And he would come in 6 days a week and practice Kung Fu even with spine surgery. And they have, I watched on YouTube, like outtakes of him training for this movie. And there are many clips where he will like do a Kung Fu move and just scream in agony and pain because his neck hurts. I'm just thinking like this guy is so committed.
Nobody else could have done it. That's why I was saying that. I don't think anyone else.
Johnny Depp would not put up with that.
No, he wouldn't. They're not built for the physical aspect in terms of like training and building and basically being an athlete. I mean, he's basically becoming an athlete. Yeah. He's doing what an athlete would do and having a goal. What I was going to say is that this movie has aged really well.
Like fine bourbon.
Yeah. And there are, you know, a few technology things you're like, okay, that doesn't look as good anymore. But I mean, you can't really, that's every movie from the 1990s. You could make that, but they didn't rely super heavily on CGI. They used a lot of practical effects. And again, this goes back to our, please, studios, ignore the fact that you have technology as much as possible and try to work within like practical things, and it will just like turn out better.
Isn't it cheaper too?
I don't know whether it's cheaper. It takes more. I think it takes more time.
I guess it's more opportunity cost.
Yeah, more time thinking about how to do things because you have to work around, whereas you can just be like, we can edit this in post.
I guess, yeah.
Otherwise.
Post is like a tried and true, like we don't have to use our brain power.
Right? Yeah, exactly. You just hire somebody to do it who does a bad job, a.k.a. look at Marvel in some of their movies.
Yeah.
But
no, I think you're right. I mean, that's that just the idea of commitment to this film. And yeah, so The Matrix really was, I keep like referring to why it stands out among the 1999s, but it's because of like how seriously they took the script, how seriously they made every single element of this film. And they took, maybe it's like not only, yeah, they took it seriously. That's what I want to focus on, actually. Like, this is not one of those campy sci-fi films. This is not one of those, it's almost noir a little
bit. It's not The Fifth Element.
No, but The Fifth Element works in its own way.
Yes, and this is not to detract from The Fifth Element.
Sure.
But there is no, like, there may be moments of comedy, but it is decidedly not comedic. It's not trying to poke fun at itself. It is very self-serious.
Yeah. It's very self-serious, and this is like the start of sci-fi movies being extremely, I mean, I said it's like noir, it's like a spy thriller, but it's also like a mystery at the same time, and the best movies are mysteries. Like, we want to know, we just have questions as we go along, and yeah, so I don't know, I keep running out of my thoughts here tonight, but The Matrix is one of those films that as you go along, you're like, what is The Matrix? Like, you actually want to know more. It's because they really do delve into that well. So,
yeah, and even as the movie concludes, you do realize the story's not over. Now, I've seen the second Matrix movie. I haven't seen the third one, and I'm kind of dragging my feet on it because of the reviews, but I would watch them, or the fourth one. I guess there's a fourth one now. I didn't really hear too much, many good things about that one either. So it's a little disappointing because I was thinking about it as I think this is like the third time I've seen it. And I was like, I really love this world. Like, so it kind of does stink that it doesn't seem like the other, I mean, the second movie was fine. I think they leaned a little bit more into the action and less into the philosophy aspect. And like, there were some really cool action sequences I remember in the second movie. But I think, and maybe they just didn't quite hit it on some of the world building aspects of the movie, which is unfortunate. But I think the fact that they made it so this movie could stand on its own benefited it in the long run, because it's not like you can just ignore the second and third movies if you want to. Because at the end of this movie, it's like they don't solve everything, but like there's like him defeating the agents and like coming back and like coming back from the dead almost like with the kiss from Trinity makes it so you're like, it's triumphant and like they won. And now he's like, he can read the Matrix, he knows everything, and he's the one. So that's like satisfying enough. You don't really have to go further if you don't want to.
Yeah, definitely. He is the one. In that one scene where he can only read, he can only see ones and zeros on Cypher's computer, and Cypher's like, yeah, I see, like, that's a car, that's whatever. And then now he's fully realized. He's completely red-pilled, I guess. We can say that. And he's coming to his own. And when he goes and visits the Oracle, and she says that he is not the one. Well, she doesn't say it directly. She just says, I'm sorry, you know. And then we think he's not the one. And then he goes in. Well, we know he's the one, like deep down. The audience does. And then he is the one. Because Morpheus is like, she told you exactly what you needed to hear, so that you would act the way that you would act and be do what you needed to do. And then he's, again, he's given choice. throughout this whole film, Neo is given these choices. And one of the biggest choices that he makes at the end is whether to die or let Morpheus die. And luckily, he kind of makes a third-party choice and chooses to die, I guess, which is not the third-party choice. It's one of the choices. But he comes back to life through Trinity's kiss, which is also a little cliche. We talked about this in the last episode.
Actually, kind of similar to The Fifth Element.
Yeah, where it's like they met. Although, I will say, Neo deserved Trinity more than whatever Bruce the Willis's other, character. Because Bruce Willis's character kissed her without her knowing when she was sleeping. Yeah. So
that was a little weird.
Neo was a little bit more respectful, I'd say.
Yes, definitely more respectful.
So,
actually, although Cypher was trying to,
yeah,
if you remember, which that's not really surprising if you know Cypher at all. Now, we can't go this whole podcast without mentioning Hugo Weaving's performance as Agent Smith, the sort of emotionless enemy who is actually a computer program. Mm-hmm. But really, this performance always stuck out to me from the first time I watched it. Mr. Anderson. It's just like, it's such a weird but like pretty on the nose take on like what a computer program that's like acting as a human would be like.
It's like neutral.
But and it's really interesting how he like becomes self-aware and then is like, I want to escape the Matrix, and the only way I can escape the Matrix is by destroying it, right? Or something like that. I don't know.
I always thought it was weird why the Matrix gave life to separate AI entities rather than being in control.
I thought they were supposed to be like the police force.
Yeah, but why isn't the Matrix in control? Why did they make separate?
Yeah, why isn't it just like an arm of the Matrix that's
exactly
like
rather than agents. Its own sentient being who can self-realize why they want to leave the Matrix.
Well, maybe the AI made the same mistake as humans where they thought that they could like make something that would like not become
maybe the AI's in the in its own Matrix.
So it's like the AI of the AI,
and the year is 2399.
Yeah. Oh, that would be crazy.
Yeah,
yeah, it's like, wait, we're actually AI. That would be about what that probably is a Rick and Morty episode. Like, there's definitely a Rick and Morty
well Matrix there is episode. Because the Scary Terry episode,
yes,
where they go inside each other. I mean, that's incepting inceptions. That's like a play on Inception, but it could kind of go along with this, a dream inside of a dream. So maybe the Matrix was the inception of its day.
No, it was, because I mean it kind of was, yeah.
It's it just like, wasn't dreams necessarily. It was more
it's a little bit more concrete than that.
Yeah. I mean, this is like so many movies have been influenced like, I mean, one, Keanu Reeves' career, like him going into John Wick is directly out of this. Him learning kung fu really paid off in the
future.
Yeah,
and like his career was like like he had some notable movies. Point Break, I mentioned. Speed was a big movie with Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
But then I think it dwindled a little bit, and then it was like, boom, he hit the Matrix. He did the three Matrix movies. He was in some like comedies and stuff, and then it was like started to go downhill again. And then he hit John Wick, and it's like boom. So clearly, action is like the movies that he should be in.
Yeah. Well, that's something that I want to talk about. You mentioned earlier how Keanu Reeves may not have been the best actor of his day, especially okay, so do you think it's so you said he's good for this specific role, which I agree with you about that. I think he's good for this specific role. I don't think he's one of the best actors that has ever existed. I think he gets treated almost like a Nicolas Cage, where people look down on him because of some specific performances, and yes, those have accumulated over time, but he's also playing a character. He's playing the same character, and I think he plays that same character really well, besides Ted in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Which I said you can still see similarities. It's just like a much goofier, laid-back version of his character that he plays.
You're right. You're very right. So I think he's playing the same character, almost like Nicolas Cage plays the same character in all of his films.
But sometimes it works really well. So I think that's where people get it wrong a little bit. It's not always that. Even Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro and Al Pacino only have so much range. I think sometimes people give them too much credit. Like, they know how to pick the right people to work with who utilize their skill set the best. Mm-hmm. Why do you think De Niro and DiCaprio have worked with Scorsese so much? Because they know that he's not going to make them look bad by putting them in a role that they shouldn't be in, or like writing a role that would be like a bad fit.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm sure Scorsese knows he's going to work with the people he works with, so he writes the roles with them in mind.
Yeah.
He probably does his own casting in his head.
Yeah, exactly. So and some people who are more character actors can maybe do a little bit better job of like a Daniel Day-Lewis of like extending themselves beyond like a typical and like transforming. And even DiCaprio and some other people have like attempted or even successfully done that. I'm not saying that there's not actors that can, but generally actors are like, they play a certain thing really well and you have to know how to use that. So in his, like in Point Break, that's kind of like, it's a movie about surfers who are also bank robbers, and Keanu Reeves is an FBI agent. So it's a really like, it's kind of a goofy premise, and he takes the role like really seriously, and you can tell that he's like really into the role. And that somehow works for the movie. Like, even with its like ridiculous premise, it works that he is so self-serious. Like, I think people criticize him for being like that. And it like, I am an FBI agent. Like, that's a very, like, people like to make fun of him for, but it like works well in the movie. Like, if you just accept the movie for what it is.
Yeah.
So that was a long way of saying it's not always, actors do have bad performances. It's not like they're completely faultless, but I think you also, it's just the synthesis of the actor and the director working together. Sometimes bad performances are a result of like,
script.
Or just being cast wrong. People get cast wrong because they have name brand, but it doesn't mean they're necessarily being cast in the right part.
But that's why I agree with you on that definition completely about what makes a good actor. That's why I think Keanu Reeves is a good actor. I'm going to stand by that.
Yeah, he is a good actor. I agree.
I wasn't speaking in the front of the microphone, my bad.
But I'm sure that I was still picking you up.
Yeah. So Keanu Reeves is very, very, like, there are movies where Keanu Reeves is the best possible actor for that role. And those are very specific movies, sure, like John Wick or The Matrix or maybe even Point Break, if you say this, Ben. But, and the other roles, it probably could have been, he probably could have been replaced by another actor. And Hugo Weaving is one of those characters where he also had a commitment to this because he developed this neutral voice before coming in to play Agent Smith, and it worked so well. This is how his career took off as well. He ended up playing the Red Skull in Captain America,
Elrond in Lord of the Rings.
Yep. This movie is took off so many people's careers from
that
this.
Is true. I actually kind of wish Carrie Ann Moss had a better career because she's a really good actress, but this and Memento are like her biggest movies.
Yeah. I mean, it's all within a year and a half, I guess.
Yeah. So. And Memento is not even like a ginormous movie. It's only bigger now because of the name recognition of Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's very much true. I don't know. I mean, what other... Just imagine being in the theater, Ben. This is 3 years before we were born, and this came out in the summer of 1999. And just imagine being out of school in 1999. You're in high school. You and your friends see the trailer for The Matrix, and there are all these other great trailers out as well for great movies. And you go, you watch The Matrix, you see those fight scenes, you see the kung fu scene, you question reality, you watch... you just watch all these alien bug things, sentinels, and you go home and you dream about this. And in that dream, you're having tears of joy because you loved the movie that you watched. And this did not happen to me. I'm not bringing this up because this specifically happened to me at all. But then you wake up the next day and you think, man, that movie was so good. Because I never think about a movie until the next morning. I always sleep on it. And you wake up and you think, wow, this movie will go down in history. If Y2K kills us all, then I'm okay. Because The Matrix came out and I enjoyed it and it was good.
That would be a great story to live.
Yeah.
Maybe if I can go into The Matrix, I can live that story.
Well, we'd have to wait, 200 or 180 years if we went back in time?
We have to create age-extending technology so that we can see it. Happen.
We could do that. We'll work on it.
We'll work on it. Yeah.
We're both in the medical field.
Yeah. I mean, mine's maybe not. It would be like a really pretty not as direct relationship to aging, but you know, I'll deliver the medications. I can do that.
Yeah.
So You can experiment on me.
Is there time travel insurance?
Time travel insurance? Sure. If you travel to the future, there probably is.
Oh.
Okay. But if you just need regular insurance for your car, auto, home, or business, you should call it Hedman Anglin Agency. They are known for saving tons of money.
Oh, tons.
Tons of money on car insurance. And you can call them at 614-486-7300. 614-486-7300. And if you like them, please leave them a Google review. They have 22 Google reviews right now, and they're all 5 stars.
Wow.
Which is better than our podcast on Apple Podcasts.
On iTunes, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because somebody gave us a 1-star review and we know who it is.
Yeah.
We're mad. They never changed.
She's gone.
She's mean.
She's been gone. We goned her. We gone-girled her.
She's never invited back. She was even on the podcast and still gave it 1 star.
It's ridiculous. And she forgot her account and can't go back in.
Oh, wait, seriously?
Yeah, that's why she hasn't changed it. She tried. So we're forever.
Some actions have lasting consequences. That's what you learn.
Yes, that and pregnancy.
True.
Yeah. So, Ben, what was your favorite part of the movie?
Oh, that's a great question. I have to say, the ending sequence where they get all the guns and they go into the room with the security guards and they just absolutely light up the room is awesome. Now, I had some questions as to the innocence. Like, I was like, wait, are these just like people in the Matrix who are like working security at a building and they're just like massacring all of them? Because these are real people and they actually die.
Yep.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, I mentioned that when we were watching. Yeah. I was like, aren't these real people dying?
So that part I was a little questioning of, maybe a little bit of a plot hole, but it was really cool. So I'll forgive it. It's worth those people dying.
It was. I'd have to say, if you were going to ask,
Yeah, what's your favorite scene?
Oh, thank you. I have two. I'm extra.
I didn't ask for two extra favorite scenes.
I think one of my favorites was the Kung Fu scene, but since we've talked about that so much, well, the triple kick was awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
And then when he gets on the floor and he like gets back up and he like does this awesome kick to Morpheus and Morpheus still beats him. I want to say Mobius, but that's Marvel.
or Morbius.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also Marvel. My other favorite scene was when the Sentinels and Agent Smith bring Neo into the room and are questioning him about some things and take his mouth away and then put the bug in his belly button. I love that scene so much. Like the spider tentacle thing goes in his belly button. I thought that was awesome. And it's cool. It's a good theme because it's like, are we going to stick it to the man? Because the man took our voice away with the mouth being gone.
It's true.
That's exactly true. What I thought in the theme, and I didn't have to look it up what that meant online at all. So those were my favorite scenes.
Some good scenes.
Yeah. Do you think that this influenced Inland Empire?
Well, it did represent sort of the dream within a dream idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not. It's just a dream in reality, though. It's not a dream within a dream.
Yeah.
But it's like, it is like a, okay, maybe
if multiple we extrapolate levels of it, reality.
Multiple levels of reality. Sort of subconscious, like Neo has this intuitive feeling that something else is influencing him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not aware of exactly what that is. You see that in Inland Empire a little bit with people's like ancestor, like there's like cross between people, yeah, whether they're the same people or they're just like representations of the same person.
Yeah.
In multiple lifetimes.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a stretch, but it's there.
I'd have to agree with you. Yeah. Multiple levels. Lots to keep up with. I mean, other than that, there's probably nothing else that would connect the two films.
Not really.
Yeah.
David Lynch and the Wachowskis, markedly different styles of filmmaking.
Yeah. David Lynch, one of the greatest. Do you have any movie highlights?
So I watched a couple more episodes of Twin Peaks: The Return. And it's very intriguing, but I still have no idea what's going on, and I'm on episode 7. Okay. So
it's keeping you in.
Yes.
Are you on the edge of your
seat? But it's so different from any other Twin Peaks stuff. It's like so bizarre.
Is that a good thing or bad thing?
I think it's good so far.
Okay.
It's very, I mean, if you talk about intrigue and mystery, it's like almost every single scene is just intrigue and mystery. There's no answers. So we'll see what happens.
Huh. Yeah, I'll be interested.
It's really, I mean, it is a show, though. I think compared to the original show, too, you have to be very patient. Like, it's not like a, and I guess it helps that I'm already, like, invested.
Yeah.
But in some ways, some characters, I'm like, are these the same characters, or is this, like, a different reality take on these characters? Like, they look like the same characters, but they feel so different, and, like, the way that the show is shot is so different.
Yeah.
So it's, but I think it's a good thing.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
But we'll see. Yeah. We'll see how it keeps going. How about you? What are your movie highlights?
I finished Mulholland Drive, which was my Lynch kick. Then I watched After Hours. Awesome Scorsese film. Yeah. Just incredible. I think I gave it 4.5 stars.
Mm-hmm. You did?
It's a stressful movie. It's stressful because you feel for this guy. And he's really bad at being a human being. So just every decision he makes, you're like, I would do that differently. So it's stressful. But by the end, you're like, ah, life is good.
Mm.
Not really.
But better.
Yeah. Well, we'll be on to watch RoboCop tonight for the third movie in our arc. And then the one after that.
Hopefully a fourth one.
Yeah.
I won't say it for sure because we need to get a confirmed date, but. Once we do, we'll see what it is.
Good point. So, sci-fi movies, they can have great deep meanings in them.
Yes. And in fact, I think the best of the sci-fi genre is amongst some of the best movies ever made.
Yeah.
So.
Definitely. Because they bring out, sci-fi is an easier way to bring out life's questions.
Yeah.
Because you can force a plot to bring it up.
Exactly.
Life doesn't always bring it up. If you can alter reality and make a story that sci-fi in a way that you want it to be, then you can construct reality around themes. But if you think about it, the reality that we live in is already surrounded on themes. Themes are already pertinent in our lives.
So maybe you don't need sci-fi as a ploy to bring them up.
No, but sometimes you need sci-fi to see that your own life has those same themes, just on a less grander scale, or maybe on a more grander scale.
Mm-hmm.
If you're me.
Yeah. Only if you're Zach, though. Tough luck to anyone else.
Yeah. But, yeah.
All right. I don't have any more thoughts, so let's close the vault.
Yeah.
If I had any more thoughts, I'd keep us on here for hours. But since I don't, we'll close it.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, I thought you were going to wait for me to.
I'm going to close the vault.
Okay.
Here, wait.
Clink.
Clink. Thank you for joining the Bourbon Vault.